It's a new fundraiser for she could hang me. I have it on the way to Dallas. Thank you. I'll say good morning. So today's daf is Lamed Gimel. Also want to welcome back Richard Simon. Baruch Hava. Still fresh from his wedding, from his chasana. Welcome back. Pleasure to have you. All right, and Mazel Tov. Of course. All right. So today's daf is Lamed Gimel. We left off at the Mishnah and Lamed Beis Amud Beis. It says the Mishnah, Shofar Shal Rosh Hashanah. When you have the Shofar Rosh Hashanah, Ein Ma'avirin Alav Es HaTchum. You cannot go to Vosayini. Let's say the Shofar is outside of the Tchum. Shofar is outside of the regular Shabbos boundary. So you're not permitted to go ahead and go out of the boundary in order to get the Shofar. Ve'im Mefachin Alav Es HaGal. Nor can you go ahead if the Shofar is buried, let's say, underneath a pile of rubble. You may not go ahead and remove the rubble in order to get to the Shofar. Remember, again, the Tchum, we'll speak about, remember, the Tchum, and we remember from our Erevin days, from our Shabbos days already. So, Machlokis, if it's an Issa D'Oraisa or Issa D'Rabbanon. But either way, again, it's Aser. Mefachin Asaga would represent, again, Muktzah. La'olim B'ilon. You can't go up on a tree. Remember, again, the issue of climbing a tree on Shabbos and Yom Tov is an issue of breaking a branch. So again, the issue to go up on the tree is an issue d'rabbanon, lest you come to violate an issue d'oraisa. V'loroch bin agabe behema, you may not go ahead and ride on an animal, let's say again, to get the shofar. Roch bin agabe behema is also an issue that one may come to break off a branch in order to be able to whip the animal to make it go faster. V'loshot in al pnei amayim, you can't swim to get your shofar. So remember, again, we saw in our Shabbos days that there's an issue of swimming on Shabbos, and there are two different issues with swimming on Shabbos. One, the Gemara says, is that one may come to construct a flotation device, which could be a potential Isser D'Oraisa. The other, of course, is there are secondary issues related with Kabi Schita, with Kabi, the way one dries off after swimming. So you can't go in and swim on Shabbos. So we can't swim on Shabbos in Yom Tov in general, but you can't swim even to get your shofar. The ain chotchin oso, and you may not cut the shofar. And I will say this could mean either cutting the shofar off the animal. Let's say if the animal was dead, if the animal was alive, cutting the shofar off the animal could be a potential problem of what's called gozes, a potential problem of shearing. But even if the animal is dead, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that cutting the horn off, or even if the horn is already off the animal. But as I mentioned before, I mentioned it last week, if you ever see the way a shofar is made, when a horn is cut off an animal, there's bony material on the inside of the horn. And that bony material has to be cleaned out. So that could also be a notion of chotrin. You can't clean out the bony material inside the horn. Bein b'davar shum mishum shvus, bein b'davar shum milo sasem. You can't cut the horn either with something that will be asur midirabanan, that's what shavus means, or with something that'll be asur midoraisa. So we'll discuss again what that means in just a moment. But if you want to go ahead and put water or wine into the shofar, so apparently we'll see people use bali toke, used to put water or wine into the shofar to clean it out, and I guess to create a cleaner sound. So then aloha is that is okay. However, furthermore, in ma'akines atinokos militkoa, we don't stop children from blowing the shofar. You know, what the Gemara seems to say over here is that lemaisa. Now we'll see exactly when this is referring to. Is this Yom Tov? Is this Shabbos? But if if children begin just to blow the shofar, we don't tell them to stop. We let them go ahead and do it. But in fact, we go ahead and we involve ourselves with them, meaning we help them until they become proficient ultimately in blowing the shofar. If somebody was, let's say, misasek literally means they were involved with the shofar, but not with the act of blowing the shofar. Meaning, for example, let's say I'm holding the shofar by my mouth, and I happen to get a coughing attack while I'm holding the shofar like this. And amazingly enough, I'm a very firm person, so even my coughing attacks sound like tekiah, shvarm, churua, tekiah. And mamish, I get it out with breaths in the middle. So that's called misasek. That means I produced the sound. I produced the sound, but at the end of the day, my intention was not for blowing of shofar. That was never my intention to produce sounds of shofar. So in that case, again, I'm not yotze. The hashamim and I'm misasek. Certainly one who hears from someone. Mis'asek, again, technically speaking, means involved. I was involved with another act that happened to produce kolos of the shofar. So I myself am not yotzei with that. And obviously someone who hears those sounds are not yotzei with those sounds either. Fine. Says the Gemara, my time, well, I wasn't having Gemara, it's a very simple question. Why is it that shofar does not set aside all of these prohibitions that we saw in the Mishnah? Remember again, shofar is a mitzvah asei d'oraisa. It's a biblical commandment. So why doesn't it set aside some of these other halachos, like climbing up in the tree or anything else? So the Gemara says, my time, huh? Shofar asehu. Shofar is a positive commandment. The Yom Tov asei, velo sase. But I've also said the obligations of Yom Tov is a twofold obligation. Number one, Yom Tov has a positive commandment associated with it, and Yom Tov also has prohibitions associated with it. Therefore, ve'in asei docha es lo sa'asei va'asei. So we'll say this comes down to just simply comparing biblical obligations. There is a positive commandment to blow the shofar, but there is a positive commandment to keep the Yom Tov and a prohibition not to violate the Yom Tov. Therefore, essentially, Yom Tov is halachically stronger than shofar. Yom Tov has on its side an asei and a lo sa'asei. Therefore, the asei of shofar does not trump the asei and lo sa'asei of Yom Tov. Okay, so says the Gemara. V'lo olin be'ilan v'lo roch b'nagabi behema. You can't go ahead and go up on the tree, and you can't go ahead and you can't ride the animal. So the Gemara says, Hashta d'rabanan amrit d'oraisa miboy. If you can't even violate rabbinic law for the blowing of the shofar, it goes with it, then you have to even mention biblical law. Now, what is this talking about? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, Hashta d'rabanan amrit lo, iser tchumin, upikua chagal, d'leka lemigzer atu d'oraisa amrit lo. So we'll say, for example, the examples that the Rashi, the Gemara thinks are d'rabanans, but let's say going outside of the tchum and removing the rubble. Now, why does the Gemara call those d'rabanans? Because those are acts from which there's no fear that you're going to violate the biblical prohibition. If I go out of my tchum, I'm violating a rabbinic prohibition, but there's no biblical prohibition that comes with that. I remove rubble, muktzah. So again, I'm violating a rabbinic prohibition, but there's no biblical prohibition that comes along with that. As opposed to, look at Rashi, d'oraisa, Roch bin de ikalamemer, shema yachtoch zemura, ba'ola be'ilan, de ikalamemer, shema yitlosh, de oraisa. So we'll say, for example, however, when you ride an animal, for that matter, when you climb a tree, those are issues, those are activities that could lead to an isur de oraisa. So, for example, the detaching of the branch, which is an isur de oraisa. So the Gemara says, if you're already telling me that I can't violate pure rabbinic acts for the sake of blowing the shofar, then of course it goes without saying that what? That I can't go ahead and engage in potential acts that could lead to biblical prohibitions to blow the shofar as well. Why do you even need to state both? To which the Gemara says, "Zu ve'in tzarach lamar zu katani." So we'll say sometimes there's a stylistic approach in the Mishnah, which is called "Zu ve'in tzarach lamar zu." This one, and I don't even need to say this one, but I'm saying it anyway. The idea ultimately is that sometimes just stylistically, even though the Mishnah doesn't need to say something because it's obvious, the Gemara will still mention it nevertheless. Top of Lamed Gimel. Ve'im chol t'chinoso bein b'davar shum mishum shvos. Bein b'davar shum mishum lo sase. You cannot go ahead and cut the shofar, right? Meaning if you want to, let's say, cut the shofar down to size, you want to take out the bony material from the inside, you can't cut it with something that would be biblically prohibited, but you can't cut it with something that will be rabbinically prohibited, nor can you cut it with something that will be biblically prohibited. So the Gemara says, what's the example of this? Mishum shvos. What does it mean to cut it with something that's rabbinically prohibited? Magla, like a sickle. Lo sase. What does it mean to cut it with something that's biblically prohibited? Sakino, a knife. Then I will say, what's the idea over here? The idea over here is that, remember, to cut a shofar with a sickle is uncommon. That's not the way one would normally go ahead and cut a shofar. Therefore, if you cut down a shofar like that, it's only an iser d'rabanan, as opposed to a knife, which is the normative way of cutting the shofar. That halacha, if you were to do that, would be an iser d'oraisa. So the idea over here is the act of fixing the shofar itself, tikkun mana, the act of creating a utensil, is in and of itself an iser d'oraisa, but only if you do it in the normative fashion. So the Mishnah tells me whether you're doing it in the normative fashion with a knife, which would be asur d'oraisa, or you're doing it again in the not normal fashion, which would be rabbinically prohibited, like with a sickle. Either way, it's still aser. So the Gemara says again, Hashtu mishum shavus amrit lo sa'asemi boy. So the Gemara has the same kasha. So now if you're telling me that you can't even cut down the shofar rabbinically, right? You can't even cut it like with a shinoi, with a sickle. then it certainly goes without saying you can't cut it in a way that would be asur midoraisa, like with a knife, which the Gemara says, no, zu vein tzarech lomar zu katoni. We'll say, so again, stylistically, sometimes the Mishnah will what? The Mishnah will say this one, and also this one. Okay, even though it doesn't need to. But if you want to go ahead and put water or wine into the shofar, you may do so. It creates a clear sound. Mayim o yayin in. So from the Mishnah, we see that you could put in water or wine. Aval mei raglayim lo, but not urine. I know this is a big letdown for the Balei Tokea, but so apparently I will say that this must have been a common practice for going ahead and cleaning out shofros. Maybe it's the acidity of it, whatever it is. But the point is, again, it's not the Gemara is not like just pulling this out of thin air. I was in the Gemara says stuff like this. It's because this would have been actually something normal to do. So you can't go ahead and put urine in it. So the Gemara says, money. Whose opinion does this reflect? Abishol. This is Abishol. As well as Abishol, say this sign. Abishol Omer. Mayim o yayin mutar kadei letzachtzecho. You could go ahead and you could put it in water and wine. In order, letzachtzecho literally means to clean it out in order to produce a clearer sound. Me raglayim aser, but you may not go ahead and put urine into the shofar. Mipnei kavod. At the end of the day, because of kavod mitzvah, since this is a shofar as a chefetz hashem, that's an object of a mitzvah. So to go ahead and put urine in it, even though again, see the novelty is the only reason I thought it would have been mutter is why. Because at the end of the day, it's actually for the benefit of the chefetz. It actually will enable me to perform the mitzvah in a more significant, refined fashion. But since the act of introducing urine into the shofar, by definition, is saying that does not look bakavadik, therefore I cannot do
anytime,
it.
Anytime, Shabbat or during the week.
Yeah, this is anytime. This is apparently anytime. Just the act of putting it into the shofar itself is a lack of kavod. So the Gemara goes weiter. In ma'akmenes atinokos milit koach. Remember the Mishnah said that if children pick up the shofar and begin to blow it, we don't stop them. So the Gemara says the inference from that is hanashim akvim, that if women were to pick up the shofar and begin blowing it, that we would stop them. Look at Rashi, hanashim akvim dipituros legamre the mitzvahs asei shazman gramahu v'chitaki ika baltosiv. So this is so interesting. Very interesting approach over here in Rashi. So Rashi picks up on the following deal. Mishnah says that if children go out and pick up the shofar and begin to blow it, so bless you, so we don't stop them. We don't stop them. So it's interesting that the Mishnah said children. What about women? So the Gemara said, well, maybe women. If women were to pick up the shofar, we would stop them from blowing the shofar. Why? Why? So Rashi points out because shofar is a time-bound mitzvah. Women are exempt from time-bound mitzvahs. And maybe the act of a woman engaging in a time-bound mitzvah for which she is not obligated is an act of baltosif, is an act of adding on. It's an act of adding on. So the Gemara says, Vahatanya, but is that true? We learned in a Raisa. Ein ma'akven loes hanashim veloes hatinokos milit koabiyonto. But yet we learned that we don't stop women, we don't stop children from blowing the shofar on Yom Tov. We'll say that if a woman wants to pick up the shofar and blow the shofar, the Raisa says that she's permitted to do so. Amar Abaye lo kasha. It's not a contradiction. Harabi Yehuda, Harabi Yosi, Rabbi Shimon. We'll say there are two different opinions. Really, three different people, but only two different opinions. So one opinion is reflected Rabbi Yehuda, and the other opinion is Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shimon. Why? What are we talking about over here? Disanya, we learned, Daber el Bnei Yisrael. So remember, the pasuk over here is Vayin Daber el Bnei Yisrael, Amarta Alehim, Adam Kiyakrev Mikem Karban Lashem Min Abahema Min Abakar Min Atzom, Takrivos Karban Chem. The Torah introduces the concept of smicha. The concept ultimately, again, that before you offer up a karban, you have to go ahead and lean on the karban. You have to lean on the karban. So Gemara says, Dabra b'nei Yisrael, b'nei Yisrael somchin, ve'in b'nos Yisrael somchos. Rabbi Huda understands that the Lashon over here of b'nei Yisrael is telling you that only men are obligated in smicha, women are not obligated in smicha. Look at Rashi, b'nei Yisrael somchin. Rashi says, Dabra b'nei Yisrael v'mar talev, Adam, Kiyakrev mikem, uksiv bahu inyan v'samach yado. So the idea of the Rabbi Huda says, therefore, lemay. So only men are obligated in smicha. Women are not. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, omrim, nashim somchos rushos. And I will say, what's interesting is the following, that Rabbi Huda writes over here, ein benos somchos, excuse me, b'nei yisrael somchin, b'ein benos yisrael somchos, Rabbi Huda understands, is a forced exemption. It's not just an optional exemption, but rather what the Torah is saying is women do not do smicha. They do not do smicha. Rabbi Yossi Rishimin understand that no, what the Torah is saying is women don't have to do smicha. If they want to do smicha, they can, but there's no obligation. That's what it means, somchos rishus. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that perhaps the machlokis between Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi on one side, I should say, Rabbi Yehuda on one side, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon on the other side, is a fundamental discussion in terms of the nature of women's relationship with time-bound mitzvos. That we know, again, women are exempt. The shaila is what? What is the nature? And this happens to be a fascinating machlokis, maybe something we'll have to come back to it another time, but a fascinating machlokis in terms of what does it mean when women are exempt? Does it mean that women are exempt, but if they want to do it, they can? Or does exempt mean it's a forced exemption? And the follow-up question to that is there one answer for all mitzvos, or do different mitzvos have different types of answers? So we know, for example, by many time-bound mitzvos, women are exempt, but yet they do them. They do them. So, right? So a woman will hear shofar, she's exempt from that. A woman will light Neiros Chanukah, she's exempt from that. A woman will go and take Lulav and Esrog, she's exempt from that. A woman still in the Sukkah, she's exempt from that. So many mitzvos, I say she has wrong, where technically speaking, a woman is exempt, where the Maaseh says she does it. But yet again, there may be other examples where the exemption was a forced exemption. For example, Rav Moshe brings this, not our topic for today, but Rav Moshe brings down one of the examples of this is tefillin. Rav Moshe posits, and he brings a whole halachic basis to this, that the tefillin is a mitzvah shazman grama, but Rav Moshe posits that it was a forced exemption. That again, it's not something that a woman is permitted to avail herself of. Rav Moshe holds that it but the exemption is such that lamaisa, she's not permitted to do the mitzvah. So, point of Gemara, not for our topic for today, but the point the Gemara is making over here is that lemaisa, it could be that the machlokes over here, the machlokes about women's relationship to shofar is rooted in a more fundamental machlokes about women's relationship to mitzvahs asheis shazman grama. Okay, avam is asking bohen achilamdu. But again, what did the Mishnah say? So you don't have to stop children from blowing the shofar, and you could also involve yourself with them to help them do it until they learn to become proficient. Amar Rabbi Elazar, afilu b'Shabbos. Rabbi Elazar says, this is true even on Shabbos. Now, also, we already spoke about before that it is not technically usher to blow a shofar on Shabbos. Because remember, again, blowing the shofar is a skill set. It's not technically usher on Shabbos. The only reason we don't blow the shofar on Shabbos is why? Because they are the rabba, because you may come to carry it dalet amos in Rosh Hashanah to take it to someone who is proficient in blowing the shofar. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar says, even so, children, even if the child picks up the shofar on Shabbos, you could still let him blow it, and not only that, you could apparently help him to become proficient as well. Tanya Amiachir writes that supports this. Misaskin bohen ad shi'ilam do afilu b'Shabbos. You can go ahead and you can involve yourself with the children who are blowing the shofar until they learn how to do it, even on Shabbos. Ve'in ma'akvin hatinokos militkoa b'Shabbos, and you do not have to stop children from blowing the shofar on Shabbos. Ve'in tzarach lomar b'Yom Tov, and certainly on Yom Tov itself. So Moshe says, Hagufa Kasha, but you just made an inherently contradictory statement. On one hand, you said, Amrit misaskin bahen ad shi'elamdu vafilu b'Shabbos. Amal lechatchila aminon tiku. So we'll say, on one hand, what did the Mishnah say? You can involve yourself with, my child picks up the shofar on Shabbos, I can involve myself, I can help teach him. Lechatchila, even on Shabbos. Therefore, again, what's clear from that is that lamaisa, I'm lechatchila permitted to go ahead and have him and help him become a Baal Tokeya. On the other hand, Vahadar Tana, obviously not literally become a Baal Tokeya, he's a child, but Vahadar Tana in Ma'akvin. And yet, what did the Mishnah say? Then the Mishnah said, but we don't stop the child from blowing. Ikuvahu Dela Ma'akvin, halachatchila. Also, what's the inference from that? The inference from that is that I won't stop. If he picks up the shofar, I'm not going to stop him. But on the other hand, what? I'm not necessarily going to actively encourage it. And I'm not going to go out of my way to actively be involved with it. So the Gemara says, Lo kash, it's not a contradiction. Kan, on the days, kan bekatan shegiel lechinuch, kan bekatan shelo egiel lechinuch. Everything depends on the age of the child. If it's a child that reached the age of chinuch, the age of what we call of education, educational maturation. So Rashi says over here, katan shegiel lechinuch, if a child has already reached the age of chinuch, so what does it mean? We'll say they're already getting to the age where what? Where they're already understand mitzvos, we already have them perform mitzvos. At that age, you could involve yourself again with the child to go ahead and help him become proficient in becoming a Baal Tokeya. Why? Because since he soon will be at the age in which he is obligated, this is a very good skill set to learn. However, if the child is so young that he has not reached the age of chinuch, So the truth is, again, the blowing that he's doing is not going to be all that consequential. Therefore, lemaisa what? I'm not going to encourage him to pick up the shofar. And if he picked it up, I'm not necessarily going to help him with it. But if he picked it up and he started blowing it on his own, I don't have to actively involve myself to get him to stop. So again, here's the chilek. If the child is at the age of chinuch and he picked up the shofar and he begins blowing, I not only don't have to stop him, but what? I actually aid him because I want him to become proficient in the mitzvah. If the child is below the age of chinuch, so again, I don't actively encourage it, but if he picks it up, I don't have to stop him from doing it.
I would have thought it's the other way, because if he's at the age of chinuch, you don't want to encourage him to learn to blow shofar on Shabbos, because it's over the Rabbanan, and now he's old enough to understand that that's not the right way.
Right. So I hear that. I guess the imperative to have him become, you know, spiritually self-sufficient and the ability to blow the shofar seems to trump that. Yeah, it's very true. Says the Gemara, v'amisasik lo yatsa. So we'll say again, remember, what did the Mishnah say? That misasik, remember how we define misasik? So misasik is a person involved in a process that has really nothing to do with tekiyah shofar, but ultimately results in kolos, results in the blowing of the shofar. So in such a situation, lemaisa, I am not yotze. I, the blower, am not yotze, and the listener is not yotze as well. So the Gemara says, hatokeh l'shir yatsa. Then I will say, again, remember how we defined misasik before is, I'm holding the shofar to my mouth, I go ahead and I have a coughing fit, and it happens to be that I go ahead and I produce a tekiyah, shvarim, and a tekiyah afterwards. That's misasik. So the Gemara says, it would appear from that, that let's say my intention was to make music. Let's say I want to blow a tekiyah, a shvarim, and a tekiyah for music purposes, not for tekiyah shofar purposes, but for music purposes. So the Gemara says, it sounds like from this, that I should be yotze. Look at Rashi. Misasek hu delo, she'enu miskavin letekiyah. Because also the case of misasek is where I have no, my intention is not to blow a tekiyah, Rashi says. Va'afilu delav mitzvah, ela minaveach nebuchay. Minaveach nebuchay, we already said, Lashem, he's literally barking. O shahayu nofeach b'shofar, va'also b'yado tekiyah. So it's very interesting. What the Gemara is suggesting is maybe the case of Nesasek is where I have no kavana even for the production of the sounds of the shofar. So for example, again, I exhale, I'm holding the shofar in my mouth, I exhale, I begin to cough, and that produces a tekiyah, that produces a trua, that produces a shivarim. So in that case over there, my intent wasn't even to produce sound. I'm exhaling, I'm coughing. That's where the Mishnah says it's asur. But the inference from that says the Gemara, again, this is the Havamina, the inference from that is that let's say I'm blowing for the purpose of producing sound. I'm blowing for the purpose of producing music. Just what? My kavanah is not for what? My kavanah is not for the mitzvah shofar. But I have kavanah, I have specific intent to create the kolos of the shofar, but I don't have specific intent to fulfill the mitzvah of shofar. So the Gemara says it would appear from the Mishnah that I should actually be yotze with that, because as long as I have kavana to actually produce the sounds, even if my kavana is not for the mitzvah, perhaps I should be yotze. Lema miseli l'Rava. This would seem to support the position of Rava. Do'amar Rava, because Rava said, hatokeh l'shir yatsa. Rava is on record as saying what Rabbo said, that indeed if a person blows the shofar for the sake of producing music, that they are yotze, even though it's not for the sake of the mitzvah, that they're yotze the mitzvah. To which the Gemara says, Dilma tokei l'shir nami mesasei karelet. Which the Gemara says, well, maybe not. Maybe tokei l'shir. Rabbi said, maybe one who blows the shofar for the sake of producing music is no different than what? No different than one that coughs into the shofar and produces sound as well. And we'll say that is how we paskin at the end of the day. That the definition of mesasek means anyone who blows the shofar, not for the sake of the mitzvah. If you're blowing the shofar for any other reason, whether it's because, again, you're practicing, or whether it's because you want to produce music, or whether it's because you have a coughing fit and produce kolos, if you are not doing it for the sake of the mitzvah, that is called misasek, and neither you nor the one who hears your kolos are yotze. V'ashomem misasek lo yotze. Similarly, one who hears from the misasek is not yotze as well. Aval ashomem min amashmir liatzmo mai. Yatsa. And I will say, what can we infer from here? So let's say somebody's not a misasik, but let's say again, I'm blowing shofar. I wasn't feeling well Rosh Hashanah. I stayed home. I have a shofar at home. I know how to blow shofar. I'm blowing shofar for myself, though. I'm the only one in the house. I'm blowing shofar for myself. So the Gemara says we can infer from here that that if someone hears the blowing of the shofar from someone who is blowing it for himself, yatsa. Because so what the Gemara is picking up on over here is the only time you're not yotze is when you hear kolos from who? From a misasek. But if it's not a misasek, someone is blowing shofar, somebody is blowing a bona fide shofar kolos, but I'm blowing it for myself, not for anyone else. Maybe I should be yotze. To which the Gemara says, lema to have it to you, to Rabbi Zeira. This would appear to refute the position of Rabbi Zeira. Because what did Rabbi Zeira say? Also, we had this just a few days ago. The Amar le Rabbi Zeira le Shemei. Rabbi Zeira said to his attendant, Echavein vitakali. Do me a favor. Have kavana to be motzi me. Which indicates what Rabbi Zeira saying. Then, in order to be able to be motzi someone with your tekiya shofar, what has to happen? You have to have kavana. So you see from here that it's not just enough to create a kol that is a bona fide kol shofar. You have to go ahead and have in mind to be motzi the person for whom you are blowing. To which the Gemara says, Dilma, I did the tani. So we'll say, therefore, again, we refute that. The Gemara says, Dilma, I did the tani reishta misasek, tana sefer naim misasek. To which the Gemara says, you're right. Really, all that's happening in the Mishnah is textual symmetry. That what happened is the Mishnah said, HaMisasek lo yatsa. That if one goes ahead and is misasek, one creates kolos without intention for creating kolos of shofar, kolos of mitzvah, that one is not yotze. And then the Mishnah ends up by saying, oh, and by the way, HaShomea min HaMisasek, someone who hears from a misasek is also not yotze. But the Gemara does not mean, the Mishnah does not mean to limit that halacha to one who hears from a misasek. Really, what is the halacha? Anytime you hear kolos from someone, what Rabbo saying, who does not have you in mind, you are what? You are what? You are not yotze. Even if the person who's blowing the shofar has explicit kavana, explicit intent to blow the shofar, to create the kolos, if they do not have you in mind, again, remember we pointed out before, they don't have to have specific intent for you. A shliach tzibur, for example, has a general intent. What's the general intent of the shliach tzibur? Anyone who hears my kolos, I have in mind to him. I don't know who it is, but it's okay. I can have a general intent. But there must be at least that level of general intent. The absence of that level of general intent ultimately, again, precludes the listener from being yotze. Okay, says the Mishnah. Well, so now we're going to get into a little bit of the halachos concerning the actual tekiyos themselves, right? Interesting Gemara. So seder tekiyos. So what is the order? What is the order of the tekiyos on Rosh Hashanah? So what is the halacha? Shalosh. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Seder tekiyos shalosh. Achas l'malchios, achas l'zichronos, v'achas l'shofros. So the first thing is there are three parts to the blowing of the shofar. One part is done malchios, one part is done zichronos, one part is shofros. They will say these are what we call the tekiyos de mu'umad, the standing tekiyos. Obviously, we're not discussing over here the tekiyos de miyushav, which are the tekiyos ultimately that are sounded before Musaf. The reason we're not speaking about this is because the Mishnah is referring to the biblical obligation, not to the rabbinic obligation, which has many more kolos. So again, seder tekiyos shalosh, you have three sets. That's part one. Shalosh. Look at Rashi. Shalosh. Tekiyah, trua tekiyah, l'chol achas e'achas. So we'll say, what the Gemara is saying is like this. Seder tekiyos shalosh. There are three parts of the tekiyos, and what are those three parts made up of? Shalosh, meaning there are three sounds. You have to do a tekiyah, chirua tekiyah for malchios, tekiyah, chirua tekiyah for shofros, tekiyah, chirua tekiyah for zichronos. That is the obligation of shofar, biblical obligation of shofar. Shir tekiyah, what is the shir mean? How long does a tekiyah have to be? Kishalosh teruos. It has to be the length of three teruos. Okay, so the Gemara says, Shir Terua, and what is the Shir of a Terua? Kishalosh Yevavos, like three Yevavos. That I will say, again, we'll see. The technical definition of a Yevava is a cry or a whimper. So we'll discuss what that means in the Gemara. Taka Barisha, so we'll say, so now it's very interesting. So again, a Tekiyah is equal to three Teruos. One Tekiyah is three Teruos. One teruah is three yevavos, so one tekiyah would be nine yevavos. Okay. Taka barishona umoshech bishniyah kishtayim, ein biyado alaachas. So also we had this earlier. Let's say again, I have a good idea to cut down on timing. So what am I going to do? Let's say I have tekiyah teruah tekiyah by malchios, and tekiyah teruah tekiyah by zichronos. So I have a good idea. I'm going to blow the last tekiyah of malchios, and I'm going to blow it long enough that what? That it becomes, that it satisfies for the first tekiah of Malchios. Oh, I'm sorry, Zichronos. So meaning I'm taking the last tekiah of one set and elongating it so it counts as the last tekiah of one set and what? And the first tekiah of the next set. So what's the halacha? Ein biyado ela achos. We'll say it doesn't work. We were saw this earlier. That you only have one tekiah. Granted, it's a significant tekiah. Trans today what we would call a tekiah gedola. Although again, tekiah gedola, the definition of tekiah gedola is only something that's even just a little bit longer than a regular tekiah. Need not be comprised of two actual tekiahs. In any event, I can't. And Rashi points out because we can't split up sounds. Can't split up sounds. Even if I blew an exceptionally long tekiah with the intention of it should count as two tekiahs, it only counts really as one tekiah. So the Gemara says, Misha Beirach va'achar kach nismana. We'll say if somebody, let's say somebody davened musaf. Somebody davened musaf. And what happened? He literally Beirach, meaning he made the nine brachas of musaf, but he didn't have a shofar. So the shofar only comes after musaf. What's the halacha? Va'achar kach nismana lo shofar. And only after he davened was he given a shofar. So the halacha is, tokea umeiria vitokea shalosh pamim. He blows tekiya, trua tekiya, three times. Or in other words, nine kolos. So we'll say, you might have thought that the mitzvah of shofar is dafka when it's accompanying musaf, only when it's part of musaf. And therefore, maybe if I didn't have a shofar and then I got a shofar after musaf, I should have to daven again. Kamashmolon, no. Kamashmolon, that if you even if you didn't have the shofar after musaf, you just simply go ahead and blow the nine kolos afterwards. Kashim shashliach tzibor chayiv. Just as the shliach tzibor is chayiv to go and blow the shofar. Kach kol yachid v'yachid chayiv. So too every individual is chayiv to blow the shofar as well. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, shliach tzibor motzi as a rabbi mivdechovasa. So we'll say, we'll have to see in the Gemara if the Tanakhama and Rabbi Gamliel are arguing, or Rabbi Gamliel is just simply pointing out what the Tanakhama said. Because Tanakhama said that the same as shliach tzibor is chayiv, so too everybody else is chayiv. Rabbi Gamliel says that no, the shliach, not no, but Rabbi Gamliel says the shliach tzibor is able to be motzi the rabbi, is able to be motzi the collective, their obligation. Okay, says the Gemara, I v'hatanyo shir teru tkiya kiterua. Now we'll say what's interesting is the following. The Mishnah said that the shir tkiya is like three teruos. But yet the Gemara says, we learned in a braisa, that the shir of a tkiya is like one terua. So which one is it? Is it like three teruos, or is it, and remember, one teruah is like what? One teruah is what? Mm-hmm. Three yevavos. So what is it? Is it that a tekiah is one teruah, or like the Braisa says, or is it three teruos like the Mishnah says? Amar Abaye says, no. It's not a kasha. Tana didan kachashav tekiah dekulhu bavi, utruos dekulhu bavi. Tana bira chashav chad bava besulav. We'll say everything depends on perspective. Our Tana is looking at the tekiahs as a unit. There's tekiah trua, tekiah malchios, tekiah trua, tekiah zichronos, tekiah trua, tekiah shofros. So what did the Mishnah say? That the tekiahs, plural, are equal to three truos. So what is that? How many tekiahs do you have to sound? You sound three, meaning we're looking at the ones in the beginning and ones at the end as a bookend, as one. So I have to go ahead and blow three tekiahs. And how long do those three tekiahs have to be? Those three tekiahs are like what Jabal say? Are like three teruos. So all the Mishnah is doing is looking at everything in a unit. In a unit, there are three tekiahs. The length of three tekiahs is three teruos. How is the Braisa looking at it? The Braisa looking at it is just looking at it is one at a time. So really, the Braisa is saying the same thing, that a tekiah has to be as long as a trua, but the Braisa is phrasing it in terms of the collective, the entire unit. Excuse me, the Mishnah is phrasing it as the entire unit, whereas the Braisa is just looking at each individual tekiah. I'll just read that to you inside so you can see the words. Amra Abaye Tana Didan, the Tana of our Mishnah, Kachashav Dekiya is reckoning the Tekiya Dekulu Babi of the entire unit, all three Tekiyos, Utruos Dekulu Babi, and therefore again also discusses the Truos of all three units. However, Tana Bera, but the Tana of our Braisa, Kachashav Chad Babi Vesulo, is only looking at one unit of sound, just one tekiah, and therefore says one tekiah is like one teruah. Shir teruah kegimel yavavos. So the Mishnah said that the shir of a teruah is like three cries, like three yavavos. V'hatanyo shir teruah kishalosh shlosha shvarim. But yet Rabbi said we learned that the Shir of Tekiya is not like three Yevavos, but instead it's like three Shvarim. Amar Abaye Baha Vaday Pligi. Abaye says in reality, the definition of a trua is subject to significant dispute. Watch the dispute. Rabbi say, watch this. Watch this. The Gemara says, Dichsev. Because what does the Pasuk say? Yom Teruah Yihyeh Lachem. Torah says, by the mitzvah of Shof Baruch Hashanah, it'll be a day of Teruah for you. And the obvious Shaila is, what is the definition of Teruah? So the Gemara says, Umetar Gaminon, we translate it as Yom Yevava Yeholuchon. So we'll say, the Targum says it's a day of Yevava. Now, what does Yevava mean? What is Yevava? Yevava means a cry. So the Gemara says, now, where do we see the word Yevava? Uksiv Be'imei De Sisra, which is, again, the Haftorah for first day of Rosh Hashanah. Not the Haftorah for first day of Rosh Hashanah. Yom Teruah Yelachem, Tagiminon, Yom Yevava, Uksiv Be'imei De Sisra, Ba'ad HaCholon Nishkafa. And we'll say, remember, Ba'im Sisra, so this is the episode, in Shoftim, with the major war between Devorah, Barak, and Sisra. So Sisra, who was the Gentile general, is killed by Yael. He's killed by Yael. But ultimately, again, it's the victory of Devorah and Barak. And what happens? The Navi says, Ba'at ha'chalo nishkafa. So the Navi actually describes in very dramatic fashion that the mother of Sisra is sitting by the window, waiting for her son to come home. Ba'at ha'chalo nishkafa, vatiyaved em Sisra. And she cried when she realized that her son was not coming home. So we see again the word Yevava. Mar Savar Ginuche Ganach. So I'll say, what does the word Yevava mean? So one opinion holds Ginuche Ganach. Now, what is Ginuche Ganach? Look at Rashi. Rashi has it as Madda Amar Shvarim Savra Ginuche Ganach. And we'll say Ginuche Ganach literally means moaning. Moaning. That Yevava means moaning. Rashi says, Ke Adam Hagoneach Milibo, Kederach Hacholim Shema'arichem Beginichosehem. So like a sick person who sighs with elongated sighs. So one opinion says that, again, that this lashon of trua is really batiyavev. Tiyavev means ginu chayganach, means a moaning. We both say this moaning sound is what we call a shvarim. The three longer sounds, still shorter than a tekiya, that's ultimately called the moaning. That's called shvarim. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Umar Savar Yilule Yavil. The other opinion says, no, the definition of Yevava is what? We'll say Yilule Yavil. If you look at Rashi, he says, Ke Adam Haboche, like a person who cries, Umekonin Kolos Kitsarim Smuchen Zeloze, like a person who cries and lets out cries that are shorter and one after the other. So we'll say this is more what we'd call like a sabbing, which is what we call the trua, the small sounds, one after the other. So again, a fundamental machlokis as to what the definition of Yevava. So again, just follow the limud. The limud of the Torah, all Torah tells us is Yom Teruah. The Targum tells us that Teruah means Yevava, a cry. We know the word Yevava from Eim Sisra, but the shaila is what kind of cry is the Torah referring to? There are two different types of cries. There's what the Gemara calls Yulula Yala, Ginuchei Ganach, which is a moaning, which is the longer units of sound. Or is it Yilulei Yalil, which is a sobbing, a type of shorter cry, which what we call a trua. Therefore, Abbas and I understand, because we don't know, because there's ambiguity as to which is which, what do? We do both. And by the way, we'll say, when we say both, we do trua, shvarim, trua. Tekiya, shvarim, tekiya. We do tekiya, trua, tekiya. And we also take into account the possibility that what? That maybe Yevava is what? Maybe Yevava is both. So therefore, we also do what's called a shvarim teruah in order to be able to cover all variations of sound. Tan rabbanan. So as we learned in a braisa, minayin shebe shofar. How do we know that ultimately, again, you have to blow the shofar? I mean, how do we know that the sounds that are made on Rosh Hashanah are made with the shofar? Tamulomar v'havarta shofar teruah. Because the pasuk says, you shall sound the shofar teruah. So you see a shofar. Emi ela b'yovel. But Hashem, and I will say, the truth is that pasuk is by Yovel. How do I know that I always, because remember, the Torah only tells me there has to be a Yom Teruah. Understand, Teruah could also be sounded with what? Teruah could also be sounded with Chatzotzos, with trumpets. How do I know that it has, so now the Pasuk quotes me, the Pasuk by Yovel, the Gemara quotes me, the Pasuk by Yovel, the Avarta Shofar Teruah. It tells me I have to use a Shofar. The Rambam tells me that I have to use a shofar by Yovel. How do I know that I have to use a shofar by Rosh Hashanah as well? Talmud Lomar, Bachodesh Hashvi. Because Rabbozai, the Pasuk by Yovel says that you do this in the seventh month. Now, She'ein Talmud Lomar, Bachodesh Hashvi. Rabbozai, I actually don't need the Torah to tell me that what? That the shofar is sounded in the seventh month. Why? Because I know that the shofar is Yovel is sounded on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is in the seventh month. Therefore, it doesn't have to say Bechodesh Hashvi. Why does it say Mad Talmud Lomar Bechodesh Hashvi? Why does it say that the sound has to be sounded in the seventh month? Sheyihyu kol churuos shel chodesh shvi zekaze. To teach us what Rabbi Osai, to teach us that lemaisa, all of the sounds that are sounded in the seventh month should all be like this one. What are the other sounds that are sounded in the seventh month of Tishrei? We'll say what else? Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, we learn out from here that just like that, the sounds of Rosh Hashanah must resemble the sounds of Yovel. Just like, again, the sounds of Yovel are made with the shofar, so too the sounds of Rosh Hashanah should also be made with the shofar. And how do I know that when it comes to Rosh Hashanah? We'll say, not actually, we're gonna stop over here. We'll stop right over here. But again, what we just ended off with was that Lemaisa. Now remember, we just learned a lot. We learned, first of all, where our different kolos come from. Shvarim, Trua, all come back to the basic idea that Torah calls Rosh Hashanah Yom Teruah. Targum says Teruah is Yevava. A machlokis as to what Yevava means. Does it mean Yelule Yalil Ginuche Ganach? Is it long moans or is it short sobs? Therefore, we do both. Lemaisa, again, how do we know what Teruah means? What am I standing the Teruah with? That's learned out from Yovel. By Yovel, it says Chodesh HaShvi'i. I don't need it to say Chodesh HaShvi'i because I already know when Yovel is. Rather, it comes to teach us that all sounds that are sounded in the seventh month are all the same, meaning just like by Yovel they come from a shofar, so too by Rosh Hashanah they come from a shofar, and the Meretz Hashem will continue tomorrow.
So, Rabbi, we were talking about intent.